Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. A little short, relatively short anyway, bonus episode for you. There is still plenty to discuss when it comes to the season that has just gone. We will be doing that as usual on the Arsecast on Friday. But before we continue our look at what happened with the Arsenal men, I thought it would be interesting to find out what happened with the Arsenal women this season. A season review of Arsenal women, and with me to discuss that, the man who writes about them and podcasts about them for Arseblog, it is Tim Stillman. Hi, Tim.
Hello there.
What would you say this season was like for Arsenal women? Is it successful, unsuccessful, somewhere in the middle? Where did it go in terms of the expectations at the start of the campaign?
Yeah, sure. I would say unsuccessful, certainly. I think most people who really kind of follow the women's team very closely would agree with that. I'm keen that qualifying for the Champions League isn't rebranded as success for, shall we say, like the casual fan, because there are distinctions between, because, you know, most people would look at the table, see that Arsenal finished behind Manchester City and Chelsea and would say, okay, that makes sense. But with the women's team, it's slightly different just because, first of all, they are not quite as far behind in terms of funding. In fact, with Man City, they're pretty close. Chelsea have pulled away a little bit in that respect. But Arsenal women is a bigger deal, a bigger setup, and a team that is expected to challenge for the title in the WSL, and they didn't do that this year. In the end, I'd probably compare their season actually to Liverpool men. In the Liverpool men, you know, they got into the top four in the end, and given that that didn't always look like a certainty, you kind of take it and move on. And that's kind of how it was for Arsenal women. They did look wobbly about getting that Champions League, that final Champions League spot, because Manchester United had a slightly better season than expected, or at least they started very strongly. So it was kind of, we got there in the end on the minimum expectation, but they didn't challenge for the title, which they should have with the squad they have. They went out of the Conti Cup in the group stages. It was quite weird because they finished last season's Champions League this season and last season's FA Cup this season. Yeah. So they got to the quarterfinal of the Champions League where they were beaten by PSG. And that's not, I mean, PSG are a really good team. They look like they're going to win the league in France this year above Lyon. So that's not a disgrace. And they went out of the FA Cup in the semi-final to Man City. So, but they didn't play well in that semi-final. So,
right.
You know, ultimately the manager's leaving for a reason, and it's because the team under-delivered on the talent they have this season.
Okay, this is a very broad question, and maybe not an easy one, or maybe it is an easy one to answer, but given what you've just said, what went wrong? What was the thing which made this season unsuccessful? You know, obviously there are standards and the you know, what's expected of the Arsenal women's team, the quality they've had over the last number of years has been incredible. So what was it about this season which brought about the underperformance, if you like?
Yeah, sure. So I think maybe things did go a little bit stale under Joe, and he knows that, and why he's and that's why he's leaving. Ultimately, there were just two questions he couldn't quite answer, and I think it just came to a point of critical mass this season. So there've always been kind of problems with injuries, and again at the beginning of this season there were just loads of injuries again. Some games only able to field three or four substitutes with like an academy player in there, so they didn't have the squad depth in the middle of the season, which they needed at that point. The other thing they really struggle with is results in the big games against Chelsea and Manchester City. And again, that's been a question mark over Joe for a little while, and they weren't able to solve it this year. And I do think in the middle of the season, morale took a hit once, you know, they played Chelsea and Man City again, they lost those games again, and there was a sense of, oh God, here we go again, we just can't beat these teams. And I think morale did drop, particularly in the middle of the season. And I think there were other soft factors as well. And look, these are things that all the teams have to deal with. But, you know, players not being able to go home and things like that, not being able to socialise together. I think that was tough, particularly for injured players who'd usually, you know, maybe if you're out for a couple of months, you get to go home. Didn't get any of that. There was also, you know, that, I guess, a miniature scandal in the middle of the season when it emerged that some players had gone to Dubai and one came back with COVID, and Arsenal had a game postponed as a result, which was really poor timing as well, because we had some bad weather in January and February. So they had three games postponed in quick succession, and they had to play Chelsea and Man City again, having barely played for 2 months. And they lost those games again. And it, there was just like a bit of a critical mass. They finished very strongly. They won nine in a row and only conceded one goal in that time. So things got a little bit better. But the teams they were playing in that run, I mean, they beat Manchester United at home, which was a massive result. But the teams in that run were teams you'd expect them to beat. So I think overall, there were quite a few soft factors, I'd say, but ultimately I think there was just I think a sense of resignation over the injury issues and the kind of the failure to get better results in those games against Chelsea and Man City.
Let's talk about the injury thing then, because I know you've written about this on the site, that there is or has been underway a review of what's happening at you know, with the Arsenal women across the board, because obviously there are changes. We're going to talk about those changes now in a few minutes time. But, you know, when it comes to things like injuries, are there improvements that Arsenal could make? Not necessarily with, you know, players get injured all the time. We know that. But is there room for improvement in terms of squad depth, for example? Is there room for improvement in terms of physios or personnel or medical staff? And I'm not trying to be critical of the medical staff that are there. I'm just wondering, is it possible to improve that? Could there be perhaps a better injury record if there were more resources in that area, something like that?
Yeah, 100%. And a lot of that is already underway and already happening. So there have been further appointments on the medical side. They're currently advertising for a head of medical and sports science. So they have restructured there. Some of that, I think in the past, some of that's been to do with squad depth. The squad, I think, was pretty deep this season. So it's kind of difficult to explain how they got so many injuries all at once. But Joe, so one of the things that's noticeable on match day as part of this review is the staff has gotten bigger. There are more people there, and that's become noticeable over the last, particularly the last couple of months of the season. So they have beefed up on that side, and I understand there are going to be more kind of job adverts going out over the summer around that side. There was also a story which was reported by Katie White in The Athletic, and I understand that there is truth to this, that some players expressed concerns about the availability of facilities. So because of coronavirus, they're not always at London Colney. They kind of switch backwards and forwards between Hale End and London Colney, depending on what time of the day they want to train. So they want to train in the morning. That's kind of when the men train. So they go over to Hale End. If they want to train in the afternoon, they can use Colney, just because of the number of people that are allowed there at any one time. And there were concerns over some of the equipment at Hale End and things like that. And obviously the really good gym is at Colney. And on occasions, players were told, well, you either got to go there at like 7 o'clock in the morning or 6 o'clock in the evening when there's no one else there. And as is very typical of Arsenal under their current ownership, they were very reactive. They weren't proactive about that. I understand that there was a lot of upheaval and they had to, forgive me if you can hear my daughter screaming in the background.
Fine. She's obviously very concerned about the gym facilities.
setting the mood music there.
Yeah.
So I understand they had to do things quickly, and there was a sense of upheaval, and they can't do anything about like COVID guidelines and things like that. But they were slow on things like just moving equipment over, and some players had to basically kick up a bit of a stink. And that's just entirely typical of Arsenal under KSE. They are reactive, not proactive, which is immensely frustrating. My understanding is they did start to sort that in the second half of the season, but it's annoying that they had to wait for people to complain to do that. So yes, there are staffing improvements that are currently being made, but also, you know, just being, you know, being a bit more alive to these issues.
In an ideal world, in a non-COVID world, you know, is there still scope for the facilities, etc., that the Arsenal women have to be bettered?
But I think so, yes. To be fair, they kind of upgraded a lot of that in, I think it was 2016, 2017. So, you know, I mean, I guess that's 4 or 5 years ago now. But I think they do have pretty good facilities at Colney. And they have like their own area of Colney. They have their own training pitches and things like that. I think the issue was more Hale End, which, you know, Hale End's still a really, really good facility. But it's kind of designed for youth teams at the moment, who have different kind of strength and conditioning kind of needs, compared to professional athletes, like fully fledged professional athletes. So I don't think that there's such a problem at Colney. I just think it took the club too long to realise this kind of thing. And that's the kind of thing that the manager shouldn't have to deal with, that the medical staff shouldn't have to deal with. It should be set up for them already.
Is it, what's it like then in terms of the structure of that? Because obviously Joe Montemurro is the manager, and his remit is what happens on the pitch. But, you know, if we think about the men's game, there is a manager, but there's also a technical director who is in, you know, supposed to anyway at most clubs, relieve some of the burden of, you know, the day-to-day stuff that happens at a football club. So is there somebody in that position for the Arsenal women, or is that a position that could be created to ensure that the manager or head coach or whatever you want to call whoever it is that comes in for next season can concentrate more fully on the football side of things and not have to worry about admin and facilities and all of that kind of stuff?
So they don't have a technical director at the moment. They have a general manager, Claire Wheatley, who's been at the club for some years and was a player for very many years as well. But she, you know, she kind of does a lot of the admin around fixture arrangement and things like that. They don't currently have a technical director. I, reading between the lines, I think that that position might be created. Yes. So when a few months ago and a little while before The Athletic released that story about players having frustrations, I kind of caught wind of that. And through the AST, tried to make contact with Vinay to ask some questions about that. Now, obviously, I wasn't expecting him to give me the full chapter and verse about exactly what's happening. I wouldn't expect to get that at all. But I, and this is purely me being speculative, so I don't want anyone having a go at me if this doesn't happen.
No headlines.
I very much read between the lines that I think they want to create a technical director type position. And they've got an opportunity now because they're currently in the process of appointing a new manager. And it will be very interesting to see what happens with that, whether, you know, and they've been, Arsenal have been, and again, rightly and justifiably, very secretive about this process. I haven't heard any sort of whisper, not even a rumour about who the new manager might be. All I know is that it will probably be announced quite soon because they put up a three-strong shortlist, I think, last week.
Right.
So I assume from that there were second interviews, but no idea who they are. So it will be quite interesting to see if they do this and how they do this. Even if they don't call that individual a technical director, I do think that there will be some appointment in that vein. Chelsea last season appointed a technical director for the first time in about November, I think. So this is very much where the wind is blowing. Man City don't have one at the moment.
What about across Europe in sort of the big European women's teams? Is that part of the structure there?
It's again, they have, some of them will have like technical director type kind of roles going, whether they call them that or not, I'm not sure. It's kind of because everyone has like a, what they call a general manager. In fact, in the WSL, you have to have a general manager. It's in the rules. And so a lot, it's quite loose how you can interpret that role. And so those can be quite like technical directory in some clubs, and in some clubs they'll be purely pastoral. Right. I think Arsenal have been on the more pastoral side, but I do think that will change.
Well, look, I mean, there's plenty going to happen. Obviously, I'm going to ask you a little bit about Joe Montemurro now in a minute, but in terms of the overall season on the pitch, who have been the standout performers for Arsenal? I know it's a little bit difficult in that, you know, when we talk about the men's game, I think it's very easy for us to sort of point fingers at underperformers and players that we don't like and things like that. And I do think the way that you write and talk about the women's game is different. So I don't want to really go down that road of like who's been terrible or anything like that. And I know it's a much more difficult situation for you because of the access that you have to the women's team and some of the relationships there. So that's not what I'm interested in. I am interested in, you know, who has really done the business on the pitch this season, and who going forward as changes are going to be made this summer, and you can fill us in on a few of those changes as well. Who are going to be the building blocks for this team going into next season?
Yeah, sure. So the best player this season by quite a distance, I think, was Katie McCabe at left back. she came out with she's in double figures for assists. In fact, she played left back in every single game, and she was joint top for assists in the division. She had 12, I think, but 14 in all competitions, as well as 4 or 5 goals on top of that. She's just been absolutely brilliant. And she saved Arsenal a real problem, because their big signing last summer was Steph Catley, who is a left back. And Steph Catley is possibly the best left back in the world. It was Arsenal's big signing. Their big kind of, this is world-class player. And she barely played because she kept getting hamstring injuries and had to have surgery. So she could only play 3 or 4 games. But Katie McCabe made that a non-issue, frankly, with the way she played at left back and her contribution to the attack. And she's just one of those players who, she's 25 now, and she's just coming into that age where she's heading towards her prime. She signed a new contract as well, thankfully. So
she's had an interesting time, hasn't she, at the club? Yep. You know, if you want to give a bit of background on that, because it's been a bit up and down for her.
Yeah, hugely. So she came as a young player when she was 19 or 20, and she was hugely, you know, really, really kind of very, very highly rated young player. But she came at a time where Arsenal under Pedro Loza had like a squad of 50 players under Pedro. They had a massive squad, and she struggled for game time, and it was just the worst time for her to struggle for game time. So she went on loan to Glasgow City in Scotland, and that was quite a surprising move, because everyone expected her to go to perhaps a mid-table WSL club, and she said no, like, frankly, I want to go somewhere where we play really good football and we win quite a lot of the time, because she wanted to get her love back for playing. And she went there, and Glasgow City, they win the league every year in Scotland, and she went and scored loads of goals, got loads of assists. It was below her level, but she just wanted to get that enjoyment back. But then when she came back at the end of 2017, she fully expected to leave. Still, she thought, okay, I've had a good loan spell, now I can look at going to another club, probably in the WSL. And she'd kind of fallen out with Pedro Loza, the manager, at that point. But at the point that she came back, Pedro Loza left and Joe Montemurro arrived. And kind of Joe just kind of spoke to her and said, okay, just, you know, train with us for a few weeks. It was a few weeks away from the transfer window opening. So he said, okay, that's fine. Just, you know, train with us. You're part of the group. And then after about 2 weeks, he spoke to Katie again and said, why the hell were you on loan? Why weren't you with us? Why weren't you playing? And Joe has put her in the team in, you know, in a variety of positions every week, basically, ever since. And yeah, she was that close to leaving and being out the door. But Joe really saw something in her as a player, and she's just gone from strength to strength. And the last three or four seasons, I think she's just gone up a level every year. And she will certainly be, you know, one of the leaders, I think, of the group going forward. Another player who I'd say has had a really good season is Caitlin Ford. Arsenal signed her. She's had a weird time at Arsenal because she was signed last January. And she had two games before everything shut down for COVID. And I believe she was the first footballer, I think, in the world to be asked to quarantine because she went and played some Olympic qualifiers for Australia in Vietnam. And this was in February.
Right.
And when she came back, she was asked to quarantine, and that was when that word seemed really kind of weird and scary to everyone. And so, you know, she really didn't get going, didn't have a chance to get going. But this season she's been great. She's got double figures for goals and assists, a real kind of real strong addition to the forward line. And because she can play up front, it's been a really nice signing, because for a while Arsenal didn't have a backup striker because nobody wants to come and sit on the bench behind Vivian Miedema. But because Caitlin can play wide and up front, they've been able to, you know, just rotate Viv every now and then, or play them both together. It's just kind of beefed up the front line quite nicely. She's been a really good signing. So I think those two have been like the real standout players who can say they've played, you know, they've played near the best of their kind of their level for the whole season.
What about some of the players who, you know, have been a big part of things who might not be around next season, departures, and what kind of gaps are they going to leave in the squad?
Yeah, sure. So Giroud has already gone to Wolfsburg. That, to me, I think Giroud's a really, really good player. I don't think it ever quite worked at Arsenal for her. I think I understand why Arsenal bought her. She's a slightly different type of player to the one Arsenal have got. She's kind of a bit more physical. She started out as a number nine, so she's more kind of there to hold the ball up and things like that. I just don't think it ever really worked for Gilles at Arsenal. So I think that's an okay move. And she's essentially already been replaced by Mane Urbuchi, who's a Japanese playmaker, who's just a lovely footballer to watch. She's 28. She's won the World Cup with Japan. She's best friends with Vivian Miedema and Lisa Evans. She played with them at Bayern Munich. She played with the goalkeeper, Manu Zinsberger, and one of the defenders, Vicky Schnaderbeck. So she knows four of the players very well already. And she's just an Arsenal player, Anna Urbuchi. And she's a player that Arsenal have been after for a long time. They tried to sign her in 2019. They tried to sign her in January 2020. The move was blocked by the Japanese FA because they didn't want any of their players going to Europe until after the Olympics. And then that got complicated by the postponement of the Olympics. So it's been a very long road to getting Mane Iwabuchi to Arsenal. But she's just a lovely player. And I do think that that's kind of a good substitution. In terms of some of the other players that have left, so Leonie Meyer, who's a German right back, she's left. Her contract ended. It didn't really work for her at Arsenal. Her career, I think, has just gone off the boil slightly. She really broke through as a teenager, almost Bellerin-esque, actually. Broke through as a teenager, albeit in Germany. Looked like the next big thing. It didn't quite work for her, so she came to Arsenal and she just never really nailed down a place in the team. Arsenal have a few right backs. I don't think her position needs replacing per se. And two of the other players that are leaving, one will be Daniel van der Donk. Unfortunately, I was told a few weeks ago that would probably happen. I know that Leon have had an offer in for her for a while. I don't know for sure that she's taking that, but I'm pretty certain she's going. That's really unfortunate. DVD's, a lovely player. Really, really great character as well to have around. I don't think there's anything massively sinister behind this. She's been at Arsenal for 6 years. She's 29. Leon are rebuilding. They've lost a few players. They're bringing a few players in. I think at 29, I can completely understand why someone would want to be part of that and maybe just have a bit of a change of scenery.
Yeah.
So that's a really unfortunate one. But I completely see the player's point of view from there. And then there's another player leaving. And why has it gone out of my head?
Don't know.
it's no one. So and there are a couple of contract situations as well. Like Leo Williamson's contract is up at the end of this season. My understanding on that is that basically a new deal is agreed, but they're waiting. She wants to wait and see who the new manager is. Now,
right.
I would be shocked and amazed if the new manager came in and said, I don't want Leo Williamson.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't appoint that person. So I'm not too concerned about that one. So, there is going to be a fair bit of change, a fair bit of turn. Malin Gut, that's the other one that's going. Sorry.
Right.
So Malin Gut, this one's really unfortunate as well. She's 20. She signed last summer from Switzerland, and she's a real player for the future. Unfortunately, she's quite homesick, and obviously COVID has exacerbated that.
Sure.
My understanding is she will go back to Switzerland, so she'll go back to being semi-pro. That's how much she wants to go back home. She had offers from Germany, still wants to go back to Switzerland. I don't know if that's been complicated because, again, really unfortunately for her, she tore her ACL in training 3 days before the end of the season. So I don't know if that will impact the move at all. But that's already been in the press that she might go. So those are some of the players that are going. We've got one player in. In terms of other incomings, as far as I understand it, that will be down to the new manager now. Arsenal have been linked with a player called Ken Zardali, a French attacking midfielder who's just out of contract with West Ham. But I personally don't have any kind of privileged inside info on that other than what's been in the press. So the rest of it will be down to the new manager, essentially. So it's very much a case of watch this space.
Right. Okay. Well, that sort of makes the need for a relatively quick appointment, it brings that into perspective because you do have to build your squad. A couple of things before we finish. One is, obviously over the last few years, the coverage and the awareness of the women's game has grown quite considerably, and Arsenal women have garnered a lot of new fans, which is absolutely great. I saw a suggestion during the week, and I did mention this to you. There was a tweet, I can't remember who it was from, but
Adam Salter.
That's it. Yeah. About how, given that Arsenal don't have midweek football, that if at all possible, the Arsenal women could play at the Emirates, play some of their European games at the Emirates, which seems like a great idea. Not quite as cut and dried as the tweet might suggest, though, because there's still a bit of work to do.
Yes. Yeah. So the qualifying situation for the Champions League, it's going to be tough. It's a tough old summer. So Arsenal are going to have around about 9, I think, players at the Olympics. The Olympics finish on the 6th of August in Tokyo, and the first qualifier happens on the 18th of August. And it's really, anyone who's paid any attention to what like the Champions League and Europa League qualifiers look like nowadays, which probably for Arsenal fans like me, you haven't been because it hasn't been a concern for us, but they do this weird, convoluted qualifying process. So Arsenal will play qualifiers on the 18th and 21st of August. Now, they will be drawn against teams who are likely to be semi-pro, so they should win those. It's a weird, like, they're at a neutral venue, and there's 16 teams, and they're splitting up them up into 4 mini-tournaments. It's nonsense like that. And then if they go through that, they then have a two-legged qualifying playoff to go into the group stages. This is at the end of August, beginning of September. This is where things could get tricky. Only 4 teams actually go straight in to the Champions League group stages. Actually, it's 5 this year. So it's the teams from the top 4 seeded countries. And England is not one of those because Arsenal are the only English team to have won the Champions League. And that was 14 years ago. So England's coefficient is not great. Chelsea have improved that this year by getting to the final, but not winning it and getting thumped by Barcelona, which is great because that improves the coefficient and it means that Arsenal are still the only English team to have won the Champions League. So only a couple of teams go straight in. So Arsenal, and they'll be unseeded for this playoff. So it's like the runners-up from Germany and France and Spain go in.
Right.
Now, this year, there looks like a bit of a power shift happening in women's football. So at the moment, it looks like Bayern Munich are going to win the Bundesliga instead of Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg generally win it every year. So Wolfsburg look like they're going to finish second, so Arsenal could play them. In France, at the moment, PSG are top ahead of Lyon with two games to go, but they play each other this weekend. So if PSG don't lose, they will win the league in France. So Arsenal could get Lyon. And if they get Wolfsburg or Lyon, they probably won't go through.
Tough games, all right.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. They could get, there's something like a 20% chance that they could get like Wolfsburg or Lyon. So it could be really difficult. It might not, because they might get like the runners up from Sweden or Czech Republic or something like that, which would be a little bit easier for them. So they do have some work to do before they go into the group stages. But that's why the first half of next season is going to be really, really tough, because they've got all these qualifiers on the back of pretty much no pre-season. This season's FA Cup is finishing at the beginning of next season, so that's potentially a few extra games in there. If they're in the Champions League group stages, that's another six games. The Conti Cup group stages happen like from August to December. They're going to be playing every 3 days. So they're going to need a big squad, and they're going to need to sort out. They're going to need to not get the level of injuries they've been getting recently.
So if, you know, is it a runner though? If they do make it through to the Champions League group stages, is it a possibility, or is it likely that games might be played at the Emirates?
I think so. Yeah. I think Arsenal would have done it this season, played a game at the Emirates, but obviously with COVID they didn't. It's a slightly more complicated question, just because effectively they surrender home advantage, really. I mean, not entirely, because if you get like 20,000-30,000 fans inside the Emirates cheering for you, that has an impact. But obviously they know Boreham Wood. It's their pitch, it's their turf, it's their home.
Yeah.
Actually, Arsenal had this question with the 2007 Champions League final. Back then it was a two-legged home and away thing. And Arsenal ladies were offered the chance to play the home leg at the Emirates, and they declined because they said, no, we want to play at Boreham Wood. But I think that, you know, there's a recognition that in terms of growing this thing and getting fans in, that would be a really good thing to do. And I agree. I fully expect next season Spurs at home to happen at the Emirates. That's a really good fixture for Arsenal to pick, because it doesn't matter that they surrender home advantage. More complicated with Man City and Chelsea, because they need the fine margins in those games. Spurs, they'll thrash anyway wherever they play them. So it's really not a problem to play the North London derby at the Emirates. But some of those Champions League games, yeah, particularly because, again, Arsenal, if they make it to the group stage, will be unseeded, so they'll play at least one big team. So if they get like Barcelona in their group or something, you know, like absolutely play that at the Emirates.
All right. Well, look, let's keep fingers crossed they can get to that stage where they have to make that kind of a decision about where they're playing. Just very finally, there is a new manager coming in. I know this is something that you are going to wait to cover in more detail on the Arsenal Women Arsecast, with all the benefit of information, because you'll know who it is and you can discuss that with the various correspondents that you've got on there. But Joe Montemurro is leaving / has left. You know, his time at the club, I know we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, really, but just a few final words on Joe and you know, what kind of an impact he's had on the club and on the players. I saw the video that they put out, which was really great. You know, all the players giving him a goodbye message, and it was quite emotional. Even if you weren't like a huge fan of Arsenal women, you'd be hard pressed to look at that video and not get a little bit of a lump in your throat. So it was nicely done. I think in some ways speaks to the relationship he had, not just with the players, but with the club itself.
Yeah, definitely. He's a really nice man, Joe. It really, really comes across when you talk to him, and you talk to any journalist that's covered Arsenal women to any extent, and people love talking to him because he's a really nice bloke. He knows football inside out, tactically. Even a lot of his biggest critics would say that tactically he's really got it sussed. As a coach, he really loves that side of coaching. He really loves the tactical, technical side. Mm. He's Italian background, so that's really how he kind of came up watching some of those Milan teams and things like that from the late 80s and early 90s. And just his impact, like I said, I do think it went a bit stale this year, but in terms of, I just think he lifted Arsenal from a place where he's the kind of manager that really is the kind of appointment at the time that the men could do with now, probably.
Sure,
just that kind of Arsenal where they were in a bit of a weird place where they turned into a cup team and they weren't challenging for the league anymore. And, there were question marks about how much further ahead Manchester City and Chelsea were, and instantly he just kind of went, no, we got to go back to challenging for the league. It's not good enough to finish fourth or fifth and then maybe win the FA Cup. We've got to get back up there. And ultimately that's why he's going, because they're not there now, and Arsenal would not have sacked him. He's taken that decision himself, and that also, I think, speaks to his character as well, because he had 2 years left on his contract. He could have sat on it. It's a dream job for him. He grew up supporting this club, so he could easily have just kind of sat on the contract, but he hasn't. And I think, his influence just as a man and as a character, and I think he resurrected some player careers there. So, players we've talked about like Katie McKay, Danielle van der Donk as well. She was probably in a bit of a slump until Joe came in. Arsenal were in general, and I think he just picked a few players up, and I think he just really set the club back on that pedestal that no, this is Arsenal women, and this is a team that should be challenging for everything. So I do think he's going at the right time, but I would definitely commend his work overall. And put it this way, if the next manager can have the sort of impact that Joe had in his first year to 18 months, then it would be very exciting times indeed.
All right. Well, look, lots to come this summer, both in terms of managerial appointments, players to come in, squad building, and all the rest. You will, of course, be covering it for us over on Arseblog News. There is a dedicated section to the Arsenal women. There's a dedicated podcast to the Arsenal women that Tim does more or less once a month, but there are some special episodes in there as well. So do check those out. For now, Tim, thank you very much indeed.
My pleasure as always.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
You can find Tim on Twitter at Stilberto, at Stilberto. And as I said, you can check out the dedicated section to Arsenal women over on Arsblog News. That is arsblog.news. Just look at the menu bar at the top. It says women. Click that and you'll find everything you need to know about the Arsenal women's team. And of course, we'll continue our coverage throughout the summer and into next season and beyond. So look, we're going to leave it there for now. Like I said, we'll have a regular Arscast on Friday. Until then, though, take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.